Tim O'Brien returned to Unreal Bluegrass. Talk a little bit about his brand new album, Where the River Meets the Road. Thanks so much for tuning in to Unreal Bluegrass. I'm really happy to welcome back to Unreal Bluegrass Tim O'Brien. How are you, Tim?
I'm really good, Steve. How's it going?
It's going good. Listen, the last time you and I talked was March of 2016, and then we were talking about Pompadour, something wholly other than the latest Where the River Meets the Road, and there were several things about Pompadour that I think were different. I will tell the listening audience right away there's hardly any James Brown on Where the River Meets the Road.
Yeah, it's the River Meets the Road is it doesn't really mention it overtly, but the liner notes, if you read them, it does say that it's sort of a tribute to music of West Virginia.
Yeah, well, you have, as a matter of fact, there are lyrics about being the east side of east bank of Ohio, and a lot of the songs, Grandma's Hands, and we'll talk about Guardian Angel for a minute, but yeah, it's definitely a different approach to music than Pompadour. There's no, I count two instances where I even hear electric instruments enter into it. I hear them on Fridays. Yeah. Sunday comes, and then the Drunkard's Grave, I hear an electric guitar. There may be some other things, but not really part of what you would recognize. But so you've really gone back to, you're right, and that's a great description of the source of the music is as you've described, and it's just great. It's a great album. There's a lot of great songs. I want to ask you about some of them, and we can go through a little bit.
You know, I've worked with the West Virginia Music Hall of Fame now for about 11 or 12 years, and they've been inducting people for 10, and I've met a lot of these people as they come, and a lot of times I'm in the house band, or I'm even singing a song of theirs. I remember singing a song of the Lilly Brothers and singing a song of the Bales Brothers, playing them with the Home of Bales. So some of these songs I've been singing anyway, not before that time, but a lot of them since the Hall of Fame, you know, meeting Bill Withers and Billy Wheeler and all that kind of things, you know, you get more interested in the people when you get to know them a little better. It was great to sing their songs and call attention to the music.
Well, there's a lot of great sources that you pull from, and of course you make them your own as you're doing it, but, you know, Grandma's Hands, you mentioned that would be the Bill Withers. I'm assuming that's what you're talking about, yeah.
You know, and there's Hazel Dickens and the Lonesome Pine Fiddlers, Curly Rake Liney wrote that song, Windy Mountain, and it's funny, I was thinking about making a record, and I thought, well, gee, I need to write a bunch of new songs, and then but I've got a couple songs I'm writing about my family here, maybe I can do this West Virginia record. I've been thinking about doing that anyway. I had several tracks on the Short Order Sessions over the last couple of years that are West Virginia-based. You know, they come from that experience of the Hall of Fame and meeting these people and just having a chance to do something off the wall. I get to sing songs by Buddy Starcher and, I did a sort of complete version of John Henry, at least to me, like 13 verses, you know. It's like the prototypical West Virginia song. So I don't know, and I thought about, I could maybe do what I did on Pompadour and get these, some of those tracks that had already been released and assemble them and flesh it out with people who weren't ever record, but instead I was so inspired, I made a long list of songs that I'd like to do, and I cut that down to what you hear on here.
Tell me, Tim, because Pompadour was released in an entirely different way, and you mentioned the Short Order singles, and they kind of came out as you did them and might have made a nice collection. And I want to let the listeners know right away what label Where the River Meets the Road is on.
That's on Howdy Skies Records, which has been my imprint probably for
a while.
15 years. Yeah, been a while. I mean, it used to be distributed through Sugar Hill, and now it's solely my deal.
No, I have well, that's good. I have on here one tune that I count as just strictly instrumental. It's Queen of the Earth and Child of the Skies, and I assume you're playing fiddle on that, but there's other string instruments involved. That's such a beautiful version of that song and what you're playing. And who's playing? Is it a cello or a double bass or what?
Yeah, there's a cellist named Nathaniel Smith, and he played a long time with Sarah Giroz. I got to meet him through her. He lives in Nashville, so I got him on. He played on three songs, I think, and I specifically hired him to do that song that you mentioned, the instrumental, and that comes from the Ed and Hammonds from down in the Hammonds family's from Pocahontas County, I think, something like that. anyway, down in the south part of West Virginia. That's like an old air, like an Irish air that's kind of mountainized a little bit, I guess.
We talked a little bit before we went on the air about some of the guest musicians that you have, and you have a lot of them on here, but can you go through a little bit of those people that join you on this album?
Yeah, I have good fortune, in Nashville to be, I got some good phone numbers. Stuart Duncan played fiddle on it, and so did Chad Cobb on one song. You guys are aces. Noam Pikelny played banjo, Mike Bubb, and Victor Krause and Victor Krause and Dennis Crouch. Yeah, those three guys played bass. Chris Krugs played steel and electric guitar. Brian Sutton played acoustic. I played a lot of guitar myself.
Yeah.
I didn't play one lick of mandolin on there. I played some fiddle and banjo. Who else is on there? John Gardner on drums. I'm missing somebody. Chris Stapleton sings. My sister Molly sings. My partner Jan sings the most. She sings harmony on probably six or seven songs.
There are some, always with your music, and there's always beautiful music on here. And before we went on the air, I asked you specifically about what I thought was a very biographical song, the third song on the album, Guardian Angel. And if you can just explain a little bit about what that song, I assume you wrote it.
Yeah, I wrote that song, and there's only two original tracks on the record, and that's one of them. And, a couple of years ago, my partner Jan cut this picture out of the attic that was in a box, and I guess I saw it, and I said, let's take that out. And it had been a picture that hung on the wall in my room when I was a little kid, I was just growing up. And along with that, and the picture is called Her Guardian Angel, and a little girl with a being led past a snake in the grass by a guardian angel. Well, painting in a little frame. Anyway, so it was always on the wall of my room, in my place where my parents raised me. And when I was just not quite 2 years old, my middle sister, I'm the youngest of five, and she was in the middle. She was six. Her name was Bergen, and she died over the Christmas holiday. She died on the 2nd of January. And it was big event, and I kind of mixed her memory, what I had of it, with this picture. And so the song is kind of unraveling that. After we got the picture out of the attic, and kind of Jan fixed it up for my 60th birthday, I got the frame repaired and stuff, and we mounted the thing on the backing in it. I just kind of unraveled what that means to me. Well, you know, it's a kind of a universal story. A lot of people have come up to me and said that it really touches them, and usually it's because they've felt a loss like that of some sort, of a young person maybe, or maybe just a sibling, or it doesn't really matter what it is. But it's sort of the success as a songwriter if you can kind of touch things that remind people of, it's not to be sad about it, but to process it a little more. So you're always processing it.
Yeah, and you still feel the influence, I think is what you're saying, is that for whatever it's...
Everybody still feels the loss of any friend or relative, I think for a long time. You can re-experience it, but it's part of the soul of life, the sad stuff, so as well as the happy stuff. So anyway.
Well, I would assume every time you sing it, then it just brings, it reinforces all those memories back again.
Well, that's right. It does. And the reason I can sing it at all on stage in front of anyone is that I've processed a lot of that stuff. My sister was idolized, or not idolized, I just, as a little kid, she was being watched over by an angel because she was gone in a way. I think my mother might have told me that, but she also tucked me in at night and told me that she, my lost sister, was maybe my guardian angel,
She actually told you, so, she told you that?
She might have told me that, but I look at the picture and I think, which one is my sister the angel or the little girl? And then I go, she's kind of both. She was held up as a pure young, young child. She was pure, and she was, she was just 6 years old. She had gone to grade school for half a year, and she wanted to have a birthday cake for the baby Jesus at Christmas because she's been taking you know, there are classes, and it talks about the birth of Jesus. And so we did that, and we did that every year after she died. We had a cake, and we would remember Brigitte, and it would be tearful, but we would also have joy about it, that, you know, we were at Christmas, and we were all still together.
So you have then day-to-day memories of her. I mean, this is not something that was so long ago. I mean, some people don't remember things from your childhood necessarily, but you have real memories of her.
Well, the thing is, and if you listen to the song, you can see where I say I kind of made up, I took part of my memory and stories I heard and made her into this person. She lived a lot longer than her natural life.
Yeah.
In my mind. You know, the majority of her life has been in my mind, and it's like I'm 63, so 61 years of it have been stories and imagination.
Mm.
I don't know if I trust my memory.
Yeah, well,
you know, yeah. And I think I have a memory of her too.
I understand what you're saying. This is the image and the emotions that you've connected. And now put in song, and this is how you remember more of those things. And probably the feeling is accurate, don't you think? I mean, whether the day to day, but the feeling is accurate.
Fleeting. Life is so precious and so fleeting.
It is. It is. It's a beautiful song, and you get told this a lot, I'm sure. But it is an absolutely beautiful song. It's the one that I went to almost right away. I have another favorite on here. That is my favorite. Another one that I really enjoy is. Queen of the Earth, When the Mist Clears Away. Something about that song I keep coming back to, and I want to ask you about the title cut in a minute, but as I listen through here, and I'll pick up a favorite before I talk to an artist, currently right now, that's my favorite song on the album.
You know, that's an awesome song. It's written by Larry Gross, and he's the host of Mountain Stage, which you can hear on the public radio stations syndicated around the country. And he sang that on the show one time, and I thought, man, that's a really good song. And then he put a new record, out just recently, first one in 20-some years or something, and that's on there. And I just thought, man, that's such a good song. And when I was assembling, I was thinking about all the songwriters in West Virginia, and I was like, how do you paint a picture of West Virginia? I just wanted to include as many facets of it. I didn't get to the jazz or rock and roll side, except for with Bill Withers, but...
Yeah.
Some of the younger songwriters in ways, you know, he's in his 60s, but he's of a different generation than a lot of the stuff on his record. He's a great writer, and he's one of the rare guys who came to West Virginia and made a career. And he built a career with the radio show by coming to West Virginia. Most musicians have to leave the state to make a living.
I've heard you perform enough, and I've heard you perform on either side of the banks of the Ohio. And when I hear the title cut and you talk about the east bank of Ohio where the river meets the road, and you said geographically you're kind of singing about this West Virginia influence, I've heard you talk about personal references you were in Cincinnati, I mean, years ago, this is when they did the Tall Stacks thing, and you were talking about your connection to that area and the Ohio River. I would think that the Ohio River, as you're traveling about and doing your performing, does kind of... it's a lifeline. It's a lifeline up and down the coast of those states. And this song, I thought, was a particularly apt song for you to record. I just thought something about singing about that river kind of made sense to me, knowing your background.
Well, this is the other song of mine that's on the record, and it's the story. It's told in my great grandfather's voice. You know, he's in first person. He's the guy coming from Ireland, arriving and wheeling, smelling the smoke off the iron mills before he ever saw the town. Which they say, as you came on the national road, US 40 now, but it was the first kind of paved road and a toll road that Thomas Jefferson spearheaded. And my great grandfather walked that road, when he came from Ireland in 1851. Mm. And it's kind of what I imagined. Again, there's family lore. I have some a couple long obituaries about my great-grandfather, but I never met him. I have some lore, and most of it's in the song. So it's just his story and what I imagine him to have done when he got there. I know a lot about what he did do, but when you start out, I think maybe you do the odd job in the physical labor, and you eventually got a clerk's job. But you know, the little details in the song are most true.
It is through lore about your great grandfather, but it's also things that I think that you experienced being on the Ohio as a songwriter and performer. I'm not saying you're on the river, but I mean in that area, that valley, the Ohio River Valley. I think these are things.
Yeah,
that also
you know, really... I'm crazy about history, and I'm amazed to read about that part of the world and connect it to the greater history of the country and the world and stuff. Yeah, that's an interesting time, you know. Mid-1800s. It was still frontier to the west, but that was a pretty established town then, Ealing, by then. And there was river trade, and when they had that road come in there, and this railroad soon after, mid-1850s, that's made it a real center of commerce. And my great-grandfather must have known there was work there when he left Ireland. Of course, it was in the wake of the potato famine.
Well,
all this stuff, you know, all that context is in there to me.
Then the question, go ahead.
About that, because I think it's a cool story to tell.
Well, then the question is, did he know there was work there, or did he just know there was nothing
I think he knew there was work there.
Okay.
You know, the people were leaving Ireland and, you know, by thousands every week, and after the famine, and you know, Virginia. Wheeling was Virginia then. It was one bigger state from east all the way to Ohio. And Virginia was a Walter Raleigh colony, you know, and Cavan had, where my great-grandfather was from, they had a Virginia there that was part of a plantation sponsored by Walter Raleigh. There's a town called Virginia, a city called Virginia there.
Mm.
And so I wonder if he, you know, thought, well, you know, there's a Virginia America. Maybe I should go there.
Just try it. You never know. Could just be a happy coincidence. You never know. Worked out.
Yeah.
Worked out, though. The Friday, Sunday's Coming, I will tell the audience, is really a song of resurrection and kind of an upbeat thing. And that is where you get a little bit of electric sound into the song. And you chose that, obviously, for a certain reason. You were describing where you pulled these songs from, and that was one that you obviously thought would fit this collection.
Yeah, this is written by John Lilly, who's another fellow that he's kind of made a career from Charleston, West Virginia. And he's on the Hall of Fame board with me, too. And I've known him, you know, probably known him 35 years, you know, being on the circuit. He used to dance with the Greengrass Cloggers, and then he was the editor of Golden Seal magazine in Charleston for many years and worked at Augusta Heritage down at Elkins. And, you know, he's a solid folky and a solid folklorist. And great songwriter.
These are all great songs. And Tim and I love the way you take them and make them sound like Tim O'Brien tunes. I mean, your voice, and I'm glad to hear Molly joining in on some of this. And the vocals are just as strong as the instrumental parts. And the selection, I think, is as important as anything else when you're putting together a project like this. And I think you put a lot of time into selecting what you wanted to be representative of the area you were calling sounds from.
Yeah, you know, actually, I spent a lot of time, but I didn't know I was doing that exactly. I mean, I've been studying this music for a long time, and when I finally hit on the idea, well, let's do stuff from West Virginia, it was really easy to do. I just had to make a list of songs and then practice them up a little bit. I narrowed it down to a list that would be album length, and it all just kind of fell together real quickly. It was wonderful, and having the two original songs kind of was key, just to tie it together and tie it a little bit more to me. But I'm quite happy with that.
It's great. Did you start this recording process after Pompadour was out, or were you working on it? I know things overlap, and people out here on our side of the, we think you do a thing, then you do something else, and really what you're describing is that there's a lot of things going on at the same time.
Oh, yeah, you're always working on lots of things at once. But I was, you know, going through the year touring behind the Pompadour release, you know, and then the cycle usually goes about a year, and then you take 4, 5, 6 months to get a new recording together.
Okay.
You know, something like that. Maybe a year and a half or two before you get to that next stage. Then you make a new batch of songs or a concept, and then you record them, and then you do it again. But I was done touring. I've been thinking about what the heck am I going to do, because I probably should put something out, because that's what we're supposed to do. And I admit I enjoyed doing it. So I just thought, well, this West Virginia thing I could probably put together pretty fast.
Yeah.
And in some ways it's lazier, the lazy man's way to get a new record out. But I realized I'd done a lot of the work when I started thinking about it.
Yeah.
You know, the dance work.
It's a great collection. I have 12 tunes, 12 songs on it complete, and I'm finishing up here with Tim O'Brien talking about Where the River Meets the Road. It's a great collection. Tim, you described the process of getting there very well, as always, as you always do, with a little bit of history thrown in. There's a website, I bet you, where people can find where Tim O'Brien's going to be, correct?
Oh, yeah, that's timobrien.net.
Okay, it's easy enough.
You can find out more than you ever would need to know.
Well, listen, I really enjoy it. I'm glad that you had an opportunity to spend some time, and it's already been in play for several weeks since I've gotten it off of. I downloaded the version as soon as I get my hands on it.
I'm always flattered. You make these recordings and you make music because you love doing it. The best one, this musician seems to always say that. And these records are the same. It's like, it'd be nice to sell some, but I also just do them mostly because I want to do them. I want to get this. I just want to make this. You know, it's something I just want to do. So I'm happy when people like it too.
It is. It's great.
Very good.
Tim, are you right? As we're talking, are you sort of in between touring? You had a couple of days off, or what are you doing right now?
Yeah, I had this last week off. Okay. 10 days actually. 12, 13 days off. I did some production with Peter Rowan last week, though. I was in studio with him for 5 days. That was fun. Mm-hmm. And then enjoying the 4th of July holiday.
Cool. All right. Hey, Tim, I'll let you get back to whatever important things you're doing, and I appreciate Tim O'Brien. I always appreciate you stopping by, and it's always fun to listen to you fill in all the details that we can't possibly know, and there's so much history, and you have it all right there, and you love to talk about it, so I'm happy to give you a chance to talk about it when we get a chance to talk about the...
Thanks to catch up with you too, Steve,
yeah.
And thanks for playing the music, man.
All right, I'll catch you down the road.
Okay.
All right.